Real quick before this episode starts, I want to ask you, are you still using spreadsheets to manage your inventory, suppliers, co-packers, and production? Unless you're a wizard with cells and formulas, you can only grow so much with spreadsheets. When you're selling on your website, in retail stores, in online marketplaces, and more, it gets hard to track your inventory levels. Stockouts become a regular occurrence, and fulfilling orders keeps you awake at night. Use Fiddle instead. Our software is built to help CPG businesses like yours scale more easily with constant insight into your inventory and production at all levels. Go to fiddle.io to learn more and schedule a personalized demo.
Welcome to the Physical Product Movement, a podcast by Fiddle. We share stories of the world's most ambitious and exciting physical product brands to help you capitalize on the monumental change in how, why, and where consumers buy. I'm your host, Ken Ojuka.
Hey, it's Taylor again. Stoked to be back as the host for another episode. My guest is Tyler Phillips, the founder and chief edible officer at Hummy Snacks. We talked about how he got interested in the CPG space, the unique combination of experiences that gave him the idea for Hummy, product iterations, NFTs, and other CPG goodness. Tyler is full of energy and enthusiasm, and I think you'll really enjoy his insights. Here's the interview.
Awesome. Well, Tyler Phillips, welcome to the Physical Product Movement Podcast. Super stoked to have you on to chat about Hummy and NFTs, just to kind of tease the conversation a little bit, production. And I'm really excited. I'm really excited to talk to you because we haven't ever actually had a conversation before outside of like Slack and LinkedIn, I think. But you have a really infectious personality. Your brand is really cool. And I'm excited to kind of dig into what you guys are up to in your pre-launch phase at Hummy, talk about the origin story and all that stuff. So you ready to dig in?
Oh yeah, Taylor. Thanks for having us here. And I attribute definitely the infectious community or personality is definitely community inspired. Since getting into the food and beverage space, I've just been overwhelmed by all the positive energy and just give back that different founders, entrepreneurs, people in the space like yourself, all kind of have that build it together growth mentality.
Well said, man. Well said. I think there's something special about groups of people that are pursuing something that they're passionate about and something that they're excited about that you don't get outside of that. Like I felt it in the CPG space for sure. And other kind of entrepreneurial groups I've been in before. I used to be in a band as well. And I did that pretty hard for a little while. And like the people in that space were all really helpful and cool too. And I feel like the one thing in common is we're all like passionate about what we're doing and we're building something we're passionate about. And so we want to help other people that are kind of on a similar journey. So I think that's cool. I think it's cool that you called that out.
Exactly. It's kind of interesting. I guess we'll get into it later to see. There's definitely some parallels there with what's going on in NFTs and that community building focus that's going on over in that space right now too. So it's definitely an exciting opportunity to kind of merge the two and talk to you more about that later in the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And this wasn't intentional at all. I guess it was just the universe aligning things a little bit, but I just had a conversation that's going to be on the podcast too with Dev Sevi from Sizzle Popcorn. I don't know if you know him.
I do not, but sounds like I need to do some research after.
You do. I'll have to connect you both because he has a very similar philosophy with his brand as you do with building the community and just having a really creative, cool brand. And he actually launched an NFT project for his brand a couple months ago, which I didn't know about until we were talking on the podcast. And so, you know, the listeners are going to get two episodes in a row with a little bit of talk of NFT. So hopefully people are excited about that because I'm excited about it. So
nice. Yeah, definitely a little excitement. And then also there's part of me now that is like, that might mean a little more Ethereum coming out of my wallet to support this project. But
oh man, yeah, the pain is real between the gas and the actual purchase price and that kind of thing. That it can get pretty high, but we'll save some of that talk for later. Let's start by digging into the origin story of Hummy. You were kind of telling me a little bit about it before, and I had to cut you off because I wanted to save the juice for the podcast. So tell me how Hummy started.
It's interesting. Like, I hear this quote before, but it's kind of like the dots can be connected looking backwards. And I think that's definitely true with Hummy kind of being a culmination of my childhood, being the oldest of five children. We were always kind of snacking in the back of our mom's minivan on the way to different sporting events or activities. Little bites were flying everywhere, those mini muffins that have kind of inspired Hummy's newest product. And then over time, all of us children developed a passion for health and wellness and kind of taking those snacks that we loved as kids and trying to reimagine them in a better for you form. There was definitely a bit of a gap there between childhood and when Hummy started, and in between there, went off to college, studied finance and accounting, definitely influenced by, again, our family's background in business. We've had a chain of hardware stores in upstate New York, Phillips Hardware, since 1886. Not sure how useful that plug will be, depending on how many Albany, New York listeners you have, but I always have to support the family business. And our father has been a huge inspiration, just showing how to build a community, definitely more on the physical side with a hardware store, not much online. But I think a lot of that can translate over to, and just thinking about how you can be of service as a business person, as a brand, just as people in the community. And then, so after college, ended up traveling out to Puerto Rico, actually, where I'm actually sitting now after returning yesterday for just a short week, kind of a workcation. But moved out here after college with a buddy of mine from growing up, lifelong friend. He was definitely a little more of like a hustler and entrepreneur at heart, and some of that rubbed off on me over time. He was the one who actually originally introduced cryptocurrency and Ethereum to me back in 2017 as we were going into our senior year of college. And so both of us were pretty fortunate to be a little bit early to the game, not as early as way back at the inception of Bitcoin, but just reading about the technology, seeing like CryptoKitties released for the first time and seeing that go wild, and being huge kind of fans of gamification, as well as just loving to study kind of business and trends, seeing how maybe these two things are going to merge in the future. So we ended up originally moving out to Puerto Rico. I promise this will all connect eventually into Hummy.
Yeah, I love it.
But we eventually moved out to Puerto Rico originally for cryptocurrency, because we saw some things happening here on the island and we wanted to work with small businesses on how to accept it. All of that kind of blew by the wayside once we moved out here. After graduating college in September of 2018, because kind of the cryptocurrency market was then heading into like crypto winter, I guess, as they like to call it, a little bit of a cool off phase. But we just fell in love with the island. The entrepreneurial spirit here is really vibrant, because they don't have the luxury of having kind of more stable, larger corporations or companies here offering lots of jobs. If somebody graduates college in Puerto Rico, one of the popular routes is starting their own business if they want to stay here. So that kind of started my journey into working with different startups. And then in January of 2020, around like a year and a half of living in Puerto Rico, I was coming back from a long run. I really kind of developed like a passion for long-term endurance training, like swimming in the ocean here, running along kind of San Juan throughout the cities and going for hikes, and realized the benefits that a plant-based diet can have on recovery, overall energy, focus when it came to balancing that with what I was doing in business. And so when I was coming back from this run one morning, was really craving like a plant-based frozen dessert, like an ice cream, without any added sugars. And that's pretty hard to find stateside. Back then, a couple of years ago too. Now we have some more options, but in Puerto Rico, it was pretty much unheard of to even think of. Couldn't find it anywhere in the stores, and took this dessert hummus recipe using the power of the chickpea to kind of create this protein-packed, healthy and yummy ice cream. Later, that friend who I moved here with, he came up with the name Hummy, partly inspired by that hummus origination. And then we realized after the fact that, oh, Hummy could also mean healthy and yummy combined. So that was the first product, was this ice cream. Then kind of the pandemic hit, and some early investors unfortunately had to back away from their financial commitment to the company, which kind of left it with a bit of uncertainty. Fortunately, came across Union Kitchen Food Accelerator in DC, and we were accepted into their first program after the pandemic hit. We were, I think, cohort 13. And that happened that summer and helped kind of transition that ice cream product into a protein-packed popsicle that eventually launched in January this year. And so that was the first product that we got to market. Learned a lot there from a production side. We were producing in a commercial kitchen. When I say we, it was primarily myself with sometimes an intern that was working through a DC organization where they would kind of pay for him to work with small businesses. And then my brother came for the first production run. So it was very bootstrapped. They also did some distribution with us at Union Kitchen into their stores and then other local stores. But then there were definitely a few occurrences in the middle of winter where I would pack a couple cases in the back of my car, windows down, air blasting so that it wasn't melting in like the 30-minute drive to a store, and ended up delivering it myself. After like 3 to 4 months with that frozen product, realized that it's a bit difficult to scale as a bootstrapped company into the frozen dessert category. And ultimately, that's what led to the most recent pivot to shelf-stable snacks, and kind of thinking back on childhood and those little bites that our family had always bonded over. And that's kind of what led to these mini muffins being created. We worked with a Michelin-starred chef this summer to really kind of make the yummy part of it. And then the healthy aspect of this Hummy product was made courtesy of a woman named Kirsten Cole, who had past experience at brands like Lakanto that makes the monk fruit sweetened products, which is one of the healthy ways we sweeten our products. And then we just completed a Kickstarter campaign, actually. So we are just beginning our kind of scaling up our production journey and talking with co-packers right now. But that's the story to date with Hummy.
Okay. Well, the first thing I have to say is that's probably the most coherent and well delivered brand story I've ever heard. Like, from start to finish, that was really cool. Like, I was following along the whole time and taking notes, and I could see how like each step connected to the next. So first of all, props on, you know, on that. I think that's cool. Like, I love hearing the story. Like, I love one of my favorite things, and I was just talking to someone about this on the last podcast, but like, I love hearing creation stories. It doesn't matter if it's like a movie, if it's a song, if it's a business, maybe it's like someone deciding they want to build their own house. Like, I love hearing the story of like the seed, like how it first kind of started, and then all the different steps that kind of changed and that brought it to where it is today. Cause I think one thing, and I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like, you know, you kind of go through the world and you hear a song or you see like a Caterpillar, you know, like work truck. I just see that across the street in my office right now. That's why I'm saying that. Or like, you see like a power line and you just think that those things were always there, right? You don't realize that there's like this whole process that came to make those things to be. And so to hear someone describe their process of how it like first started and to get how it got to where it is now, I just feel like it makes it a lot more accessible, and it just makes it cool to hear how people create the things that they make. So I think that's really cool. And I had a second comment and it just slipped my mind because I went on too much of a tangent with that last thing. But tell me about how your how hard was it to make that pivot? Like, you put in the time and the effort into kind of doing like the frozen popsicles or the ice cream, the frozen treat. And then you decided to pivot. Like, how hard was it to make that change? Because that's a pretty big change after all the work you put into it.
Yeah. I'm going to answer this honestly. Like, maybe it should have been a harder pivot, but I think I was so strapped for like finding that product market fit and something that was easier to scale online that it was actually pretty natural. Like, just phased out production of the popsicles, contacted all the retailers. Luckily, we were just testing it out on a small market kind of scale within like 15 stores in the DMV region, and contacted them, explained what we're doing, explained the new product idea that we had. They were on board, and then serendipitously met the chef who kind of came on board to help formulate the product. I guess that's the benefit of being a solo founder is there's not so many voices, I guess, different opinions like going on internally. Although mm-hmm. I do like to think like Hank Hummy, who I didn't mention in that origin story, but he's very, very important to the brand, our chickpea mascot and cartoon character. I think he has a voice at the table, and knowing that he wouldn't be left behind, he's still kind of chickpea powered. They were healthy and yummy snacks. It still fit into the brand ethos. And I do think kind of how you were just describing how like it's cool to hear the whole journey of a song or a movie or a product. It's like a living creature. And just because you put something aside for now doesn't mean you can't come back to it way down the road. So we just kind of pushed ahead the mini muffins on the product roadmap because they were planned for a few years down the road, and then kind of switched it out with now frozen desserts is on the roadmap, but further down kind of the timeline, where hopefully by that point we have more of a retail network effect, and that we don't need to scale this product out 15 to 50 to 200 stores. By that point, hopefully we already have a large network of stores through our other products that we introduced. And then it'd be easier to introduce a frozen dessert on a mass scale.
Okay, cool. Okay, that's really cool. Like, so the frozen treat is still on the roadmap. You just kind of decided to switch the order that you focus on it, which I think is awesome. It's cool to have that kind of have that foresight to be able to do that. The other thing I was going to mention, you said that you use LeCanto to sweeten your products, and that is that our office is just like 15 or 20 minutes south of the LeCanto headquarters in Utah. So if you ever come out here to visit them or whatever, make sure you come by the Fiddle office as well.
Oh, no way. And it might be the reverse. Visiting you all at Fiddle and then happen to stop by.
I like it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome, man. All right. Well, let's dig into the muffins where you're at now. So are you making those in the Union Kitchen too, or are you making them somewhere else?
I had actually moved out of the Union Kitchen space just because once we stopped production of the popsicles, kind of opened it back up again to seeing, is this the best place for us to really launch regionally? And ended up leading to the decision to moving down to Florida, actually, where there's a bit more interest in a plant-based snack, although this isn't just for plant-based people, but three of, I think, like the top 15 like vegan-friendly cities happen to be in Florida. There's a big kind of startup CPG community blossoming in Miami. So it's great to network and learn from other founders there. And those are some of the smaller short-term co-manufacturing partners that we've talked to are all down in Florida. So figured it'd be best to, as we're doing one pivot, kind of do a pivot at the same time and move down there. And so we're hoping to work with a commercial kitchen space there, actually, that's gluten-free certified in Lakeland, Florida. there's an amazing lady and entrepreneur there that runs a small bakery called Muff Hens Bakery. And she's interested in getting more into co-packing. So it'll be a pilot for the both of us. And fortunately, she just won a prize last week, actually. That's really exciting, which is allowing her to kind of expand her production machinery to kind of match our needs with the mini muffins.
Okay. Very cool. How are you? So you're going to have it made in that kitchen. And I think that's really cool that you're both kind of venturing into it for the first time together, because you'll both learn a lot and also have a lot of patience with the other party, right? To make sure that you get it right. So I think that's cool that you're both kind of participating in that at the same time. Tell me how, I guess two different questions. The first is, how did you decide what you were, like, the ingredients that you were going to put into your product, and then how do you source them?
So to decide the ingredients, I think it comes first from analyzing, like, what we want the nutrition label to look like, because that helps dictate how many sugars or carbs we can kind of include in the formulation. And from the beginning, we really identified, like, a need in snacks, and especially sweet snacks, to make a carb conscious version, not necessarily keto friendly, although a few of our flavors are, but just lower in overall carbs, contain zero added sugars, really contain less sugars than traditional ones, but have all of that flavor. So that's where we use things like monk fruit. And again, some of it might really plan and put together if you were just looking in now, although there are still many pieces that we're sorting out. But a lot of it was like a puzzle. And as we were looking for certain opportunities, or had an idea that, for example, we wanted to source sustainably where possible, be part of this upcycled movement, and help prevent food waste by incorporating that into our ingredient deck where possible. It just seemed like these companies, I guess, law of attraction, were like popping up. And that might be a benefit of trying to be a part of a lot of different communities in the CPG space. Whether it's like Facebook communities or different accelerator programs like Union Kitchen and Food Future Co., which we're now a part of. So that's when we came across like two of, I guess, our biggest ingredient partners to date, Nutriati, which is based out of Virginia. And while I was living in DC, I was able to do a physical in-person visit, which I think still in this day of the pandemic, and a lot of things happen virtually, it just is really great when you can meet the team involved in something, learn a bit about their story, go out to lunch, try some of the products that they're working on, and just make that real personal connection. So we were able to do that with Nutriati, and they supply their Arteza brand of chickpea ingredients. And so we use their chickpea flour and protein. And then Outcast Foods was a company that was introduced to us from another entrepreneur, from Otherworld, actually. They just launched after completing a Kickstarter campaign, and their website has launched recently. They make like pancake mixes, and they were using the upcycled fruit powders from Outcast. And so that was a first digital connection. And then actually Expo East, the founders from Otherworld and myself, we were able to meet up in person. And so that's kind of how we've gone about it. Working with the chef this summer too, we quickly realized what ingredients we can use. At first we were using like oats, for example. And then when we did some testing, both with like live testing at a racing event, and then also just looking at the nutrition label, we realized that it was contributing to a higher carb intake. And then also we were getting some suggestions from people that really loved our product for being gluten-free, but it was just one ingredient away from being grain-free as well. And that one ingredient was oats. So we ended up removing oats and just supplanting that with the chickpea flour and protein blend. As we grow, kind of being gluten-free, primarily plant-based, and being open to different alternative proteins. Although we always, I think, going back to Hank Cumming, we are a chickpea-centric brand, I think. I would like to think. And so that'll always be a component. But that doesn't mean that Hank Cumming can't make a friend that maybe sees itself in pea protein or hemp protein or something else that's combined with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Hank's pretty specific about what he likes, but he's also open to change, right? He's an open to change kind of guy.
Exactly. He's a pretty easygoing dude. and he's got some good friends that are seen on the mini muffins packaging. There's a banana guy, a chocolate chip brownie girl, and then there's also a blueberry muffin character, and you can kind of all see them on the packaging. And eventually when we start talking to it, that's part of where we foresee going with NFTs and kind of alternative ways that we can really engage with the community in a fun way.
Love it. Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to circle back around to that because I have a lot of questions about your brand and kind of why you made the decisions that you made, because I think, again, that it definitely stands out. But before we get to that, kind of continuing on with the operation side of things, what sort of are you managing all the production now? Like, you're the one that's planning it out and kind of meeting all the suppliers and the sourcing and stuff, or do you have someone else that you're kind of partnered with that's helping with that process?
Right now it's myself. That is one thing. So right now we're also pitching for investment towards the end of this year and early next year. And I think one of the primary uses for the team allocation of that fundraising would be to find an experienced COO or work with one of the like fractionalized COO agencies or services that are available. But for these introduction calls, I guess I don't have any point of relativity, but it seems I'm able to kind of just sort out who's friendly enough to have a conversation with a young 25-year-old founder and maybe relate if they were in our steps 10 years ago or earlier on in their journey. And that's kind of helped showed who I really think Humley could partner with as a co-packing partner for years to come, if they're willing to at least have a conversation, work with me as I ask maybe a lot of questions that when they're working with more experienced people, they just assume that they know, but I'm really going into it, trying to be very aware of what I don't know and make sure I learn as much as possible in these conversations. And then just keeping a spreadsheet of kind of who's in which geographic region. So as we know more about what retail partners want to work with us across the country, we can identify what co-packing partner in that region is a good fit. And then kind of the time span that we could start working with them in and at what production level. It's not the easiest time too, because of everything that's going on in the supply chain with the industry right now. There's also the labor shortage that a lot of these production facilities have. Mm-hmm. But I think of it as playing a video game, I guess, in a sense. Like sometimes you have to first sort out the map and the characters and what resources are available to you in the game before you can go and kind of strategically, I guess, carry out the various levels of the game. So kind of in that information gathering phase.
Okay.
Not to say either that other mentors have definitely helped a lot with providing those introductions to those co-packers and just different people who can maybe provide some insight, whether they were like a founder in the past too and how they went about it.
Gotcha. Okay. I have to just say really quick, it's funny. So literally in the last conversation I had with Bev, he talked about how he treats business as a video game too, because he's kind of got a similar like branding, not the same as you, of course, but like he kind of takes that same like video game approach to business and building the community and stuff. And we were talking about how like how much happier we would all be if we kind of treated work and life as a video game that you're just playing to have fun. So I think it's cool that you kind of approach things the same way. That's interesting.
Have fun. At the same time, when I play video games, it's more fun when you do well. So that part too. But it doesn't mean it's not a winner take all. I mean, there's some games that are, but the games that I enjoy playing are kind of the ones where everybody can do well at the same time too.
Just
the amount of effort and passion you put into it.
What made you decide to go with the co-packer as opposed to making it on your own?
I think so. With the popsicles, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking, kind of giving the layout of like our journey at Hummy, I was in a commercial kitchen at one point. Creating these popsicles, and it was popsicles are a different product, obviously, but it was very time intensive. I quickly realized, although I can learn how to produce it, it's not where my passion lies, and where I would want to gain more like experience and knowledge. That more lies in like kind of the business realm of things. My degrees are in finance and accounting, so can understand the quantitative, but also love like the marketing, kind of interacting with customers or going out into the field and meeting category buyers. So it was a bit difficult spending lots of long nights in the kitchen and producing myself. And I give a lot of people credit who go that route, because there's definitely advantages to it. If you have a proprietary process in making your product, you can kind of build a moat around that. And then there's a lot of revenue to be made in being a brand that also serves as a co-packer yourself. But just kind of reassessing at that point in time, where Hummy's strengths and weaknesses are. And by Hummy, it's really where my own strengths and weaknesses are, because we weren't fortunate enough to I guess have an experienced co-founder on board. Like I mentioned earlier, that's something definitely open to finding someone that could fit into that role in the future and share a piece of the pie with them. But since we weren't as knowledgeable in that, and talking with others who have gone the other side of things out of the Union Kitchen Network and have worked with co-packers, have heard a mix of horror stories and what to watch out for when you're creating your agreements and everything. But also I've heard a lot about how it just helps produce your product at scale. Sometimes too, if you have trouble with formulation and research and development, there's some co-packers that offer these services. And then it doesn't mean, again, I guess going back to how I was talking about like retiring the popsicles, doesn't mean that Hummy will come back to it. We put it back on our roadmap just because we're working with a co-packer in the short term to scale up and get more brand awareness, get into more retailers and learn a lot about the production process. Still trying to be hands-on with the co-packer. Like once we narrow it down to 3 to 5, I do plan on, if they allow, with proof of vaccination, everything, plan to visit these facilities, kind of forge those relationships and get a peek behind the scenes of what a production process looks like. Maybe 2 to 3 years from now, that's one of the reasons we're raising capital, is to build out a production facility of our own at Hummy. Mm-hmm. Would love to kind of, I mean, Willy Wonka is a great analogy of like how you can create, although it's fictional, like you can create an experiential kind of environment. So having a dual purpose production facility, I think of too, like a lot of vacations up in Vermont to the Ben and Jerry's factory, and how that serves as like a kind of multi-pronged approach to it, where you can get some of your production done, but you can also test new flavors there with people who visit. Everybody gets that more personal experience and then stories to pass on and tell others.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome, man. I can definitely tell that you're very thoughtful and very intentional about kind of the way you go about building your business, which I think is cool.
Thanks. it might be less, like I said earlier, that the dots can be connected backwards. So sometimes it's easier to try and connect and add thought to the actions that already occurred. But
yeah,
we'd like to think that's where the long runs help too, is kind of clearing the mind and just sorting through what are, as a mentor of mine, I always likes to say, like, focus on the big boulders of what needs to be pushed, right? To get your, I guess, brand kind of moving long term. It's very easy to feel good about moving little pebbles and checking things off your list. But just make sure you're balancing that with things that are really strategic and will help you, maybe not as immediately in the next week or month, but will pay off many years from now. And again, that goes, once we jump into it later, with like the NFT and cryptocurrency community, because lots of people in that space also have a long-term mindset and vision to where this can build over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
For sure. For sure. I think that's cool. Like the focus on the big boulders and kind of having more of a long-term focus. I think that's super healthy and super effective for building a business that does last longer than others do. So I think that's really cool. And you talked about, you know, it's easier to kind of connect the dots looking backwards. Obviously, you know, anyone that's building a business knows there's lots of problems. There's lots of hiccups, there's challenges, like things don't go the way you think they will with your production, with your marketing, with hiring, with funding. You know, you mentioned some investors had fallen through. You know, I guess just in general, like what is your approach to problem solving and overcoming challenges?
Yeah, I'm a big silver lining person. Like, I really like thinking, I mean, there's part of it that I've learned over time is like an acceptance of, wow, this was unfortunate. Sometimes it's not healthy to just shovel that down and try to be 150% positive all the time. Like, maybe right away, just accept, okay, this wasn't how we planned. What happened, where things started to go wrong, and how can that be prevented in the future? And then after sorting through that, so you know, kind of not to get yourself in that scenario again, just start thinking about, maybe it's different people in your network who could help. I think that's always helped on some of the darkest and loneliest days, is realizing the benefit of just reaching out to others. You never know what other people have gone through in the past, and what doors they might be able to open, or what people they might be able to introduce you to, who can then open more doors. And then also sometimes it's taking a step away from your business, whether that's spending time with family, volunteering, or sometimes it's really helpful to help others sort through problems within their business. And then unintentionally, like, oh, wait, I just gave that advice. That actually, I haven't tried that with my business yet. Maybe I should try that later on tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I think all of those things, and everybody has kind of their own formula for what works for them. And I'm sure it evolves over time.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. That's really cool. I think, I like how you started answering that question by talking about your kind of your mental approach to problem solving. Cause I think a lot of times in our society, like, we just want to get practical and say, okay, like, what can I do? Like, what's the next step? But like, we're also emotional creatures, right? And like, our feelings drive a lot of our behavior. So to like, first kind of take inventory of how you're feeling, and to make sure that you know, like, feel those feelings and don't bury them down so that they turn into stress and ulcers, right? That come down to haunt you down the road, but to process them, to not be overly optimistic, but to not be too pessimistic as well. And then to start with the people in your circle that can help and kind of go from there. I think that's really cool and really healthy way to approach it. Are there any like books or podcasts? You mentioned a mentor, anything like that, or like websites you like to go to, or like communities, anything like that that you found to be helpful in your journey from like a problem solving standpoint?
That's a great question. My mind is just like whizzing with all, I consume like just a huge variety of media, I think, whether it's like Gary Vaynerchuk for some marketing advice, like entrepreneurial encouragement, I guess. And then people like Tim Ferriss. Then in my own life, I think you can kind of find some sort of trait in every person, whether it's a team member in your business or family members, just thinking about some act of kind. Like actually a good example is like our brother just had the littlest Phillips out of the five of us. He just had his bar mitzvah last week, actually. And he sometimes is like the most mature out of all of us. Always helping. His Torah portion was all about helping others, even when people might not be looking at you. And so, and I think that's something he lives out. And that's something, that's just one example of like, you can really find, whether it's a 13-year-old or it's your grandfather or anyone really, you can find little things to kind of pick up from each person. And then with its media, I think like movies, love like a good inspirational sports movie, like whether it's Miracle or Rocky. Sometimes I think back to school, like with test taking, that would help, like the week before a test, just watching some of those to see how people kind of persevered together. And then yeah, fiction can also help, because I think there's a hero's journey in fiction. Books like The Alchemist too. So I guess just a big variety to sum it up.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love all the different resources you look into. Like you kind of turn to life, like who's in your life. Like, you know, obviously there's the mentors and stuff, kind of the mentors from afar, like the Gary V's and Tim Ferriss's, but then also like being able to learn from your little brother. I think that's awesome. From your, you know, from your grandfather you mentioned, and from like fiction and movies and that kind of thing. I think that's all really awesome that you're kind of, your antenna is kind of always just up and you kind of detect some of those lessons in all different places in life, which is cool.
Yeah. Thanks. So again, I think playing sports too probably helped a lot with that, because you're always trying to pick up different moves or different lessons from your coaches or other players. Like, oh, he tried that. That looks pretty. So, or it's also like seeing life like a video game. Like sometimes it's just as important to watch what other players are doing and what works for them, and then taking those bits and applying it to your own life or game.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, talking about games, we've already teased it a couple times, and I would just love to hear your thoughts on kind of CPG space, the CPG space and NFTs. And you know, if you want to speak to kind of what you've been doing with Club CPG and their program, that's cool. Just anything else that's on your mind as far as kind of the future of food and beverage, or kind of the future of CPG and NFTs and that kind of thing.
So dating back to my own personal journey with NFTs, had first been interested in cryptocurrencies, like really diving in like summer of 2017. I was in an accounting internship at the time, had a lot of extra hours in that 9 to 5 Monday through Friday period, and decided to devote it to researching a lot about cryptocurrencies. And then later that year, NFTs kind of popped up as another, I guess, spinoff of this blockchain technology. Hadn't really become like an investor in it or thinking about how to use it like personally in a business until I would say like a year and a half or 2 years ago. Like started seeing, I think, like NBA Top Shot in sports. A cousin of mine and me, we both got interested into NFTs more. He does a lot in the sports space. At one point we were developing kind of a concept of our own in NFTs and sports, which is kind of fallen on the back burner. Then too, kind of with Hummy, having these cartoon characters and always loving like video games and gamification and how to build excitement in a community, I thought maybe down the road, it'd be a cool opportunity to introduce these into NFTs. Now recently, yeah, as you mentioned, like Club CPG, crypto packaged goods. That's a new group that's been formed. They launched, so you get access to the group by purchasing one of their NFTs, which you can find on OpenSea. And so although it was a decent chunk of change, or Ethereum, I guess, like digital change, I thought it would at least be worth the investment to see. And the best thing about NFTs is you can purchase the NFT, gain access to this group, be in it for a little bit, and if it doesn't seem like it's something you're interested in, you can always put the NFT back in the market and sell it. But also the hope is if you join the group, you provide value to the group, you grow with it over time, that maybe this is also an investment that when you're eventually ready to leave the group and sell the NFT, you can actually get a return on your investment too. So again, it's trying, I guess, to find like multi-pronged use cases for NFTs has always caught my interest. Like we were talking about Gary Vee earlier. He launched Vee Friends this summer, and I got in like almost right away. Was really excited on holding. They were also serving as digital tickets to VCon, like kind mm-hmm. of in South by Southwest. Gary Vee style that's happening in 2022, 2023, and 2024. So I liked how it's not only digital art that you own, it kind of serves its own purpose. Again, trying to like pick up different points of inspiration from different areas. I think I jotted down a note of like, oh, this would be cool. Like, what if Hummy NFTs one day serve as a ticket to a fitness and food related event, or it gains you access on our website to an exclusive product, or it unlocks discounts. Think about how to kind of bake in different rewards and incentives for people to invest in the NFTs. So the Vee Friends project was a cool one. That was one of the first to really give like real world value to this. And ended up actually, the market got too hot and ended up having to sell those. I'm hoping to get back in eventually. but that's helped fund actually recently. That'll help fund some of the kind of bootstrapped scaling up with Hummy until we raise investment, was the sale of some of those Vee Friends. So I like to think that nice. It served it some purpose. And so with CPG and NFTs, I think again, it's cool because it can combine this real world element with this digital community. And so if you are a brand also that leans heavily on characters and cartoons. So another comparable is Emily Miller at Off Limits, who after the fact, I kind of found out, I thought, as always, I guess with ideas, you think you're one of the few that have it. It probably turns out there's lots and lots of people that are thinking about this. Some of them that are just coming to light, some of them that are working more stealthily, and maybe they'll just spontaneously released in the world. Mm-hmm. But she also features cartoons with her cereal brand. And I think has plans to get into NFTs or some sort of digital art with them eventually. So it's just cool to see that we're in the early stages. The one thing, I think the big conversation within the community is because we are early on, when you make an NFT for a product, are you looking to create it for the larger community of your brand? So if Coca-Cola is watching it, is it for fans of Coca-Cola, or is it for people who already have their MetaMask set up, already know the ins and outs of buying NFTs and exchanging cryptocurrencies? And are they the ones who are going to be purchasing it? Personally, I think we are probably in the early stages where it might be best to create something that is just for the community in the NFT space. Although maybe there's the other argument of all it's going to take is that Pokemon Go moment with AR or QR codes during the pandemic of some sort of event to a Cure or some sort of brand to make such a big splash that it really pushes people to learn this easily. And maybe that's what it is. Like maybe it's a platform or a company like Facebook that comes out with a seamless way to purchase NFTs without anyone knowing what's going on in the back end. It's like using the internet, I guess, today. I can't really tell you how it works, but I know that somehow amazingly we're able to have this call over the internet right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of really good thoughts in there that I'd love to dig into more, but I know we're getting close to the end of our time. But I think that it's something I'm going to keep an eye on with your brand for sure, because I think you're, you know, the fact that you're kind of thinking about it, you're kind of at the forefront. And you said Emily Miller, is that what her name is?
Yep. Maybe another good person for the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to look into her stuff too.
And that's one thing, maybe before this is published, I'm just going to reach out to her and see if it's okay or not to hint at that she might be getting into it. I neither can confirm nor I don't know at all, but I don't want to spoil any plans if she does have them.
Okay. Yeah. Reach out to her and see what she says, because I don't want to spoil any of her plans. But yeah, I think just in general, there's lots of exciting things to happen. And I think you hit the nail on the head a little bit with the dilemma of, you know, do you launch it for the people, like to the NFT enthusiasts that have a MetaMask wallet, the people that are already buying it and trading it and flipping it, or is it something that's kind of more mass market? I think there's probably pros and cons to both sides of things, but I do think that there's kind of just an energy in the air right now with the internet of kind of similar change that we went through in like 2009 to 2011 with the rise of Twitter and the prominence of like Facebook pages and kind of the decline of MySpace, you know, like where social media changed from being just a social network to like a platform that businesses could use to grow. And I think that the internet is changing again into this kind of NFT metaverse space. And I think that there's a big opportunity for the brands that, you know, that can figure out a way to get on board with it and to innovate around that to really win and to really do things in big ways. And it's almost kind of hard to talk about, because it's like, we don't really know what it looks like yet, but there's just a feeling that something big is coming and happening. So the fact that you're tapped into it, I think is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, we really have no, it'll be interesting to listen back to this conversation, other conversations about NFTs in 5 years, and see, has it exploded? And if it has it exploded into different areas that we didn't even anticipate now? Or was it more of a very, very early stage fad that maybe is going to take much longer than we thought to really grow? I was always a fan of like the 3D TVs growing up, always thinking that self-driving cars were going to be on the road once I got my license, so I didn't need to learn to drive. So it'll be interesting to see how fast adoption can happen. And there's people who argue that, I guess, like the newer generations are more accustomed to learning new technology much faster. So maybe it does happen faster than we think. I have so many thoughts too. Like, crowdfunding is one area. Tried putting it into our Kickstarter. Kickstarter actually has rules against using NFTs right now. But I think that'd be an interesting opportunity for maybe an alternative platform to offer some sort of digital collectible around your tiered pledge to a company. And then that could be, you could track maybe royalties on the first production run. Or you could just do so many interesting things with it, and the smart contracts too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's actually interesting that you mentioned the crowdfunding aspect, because in the episode with Dev that I just did, he talked about how one of the unintentional side effects of his NFT launch was that it kind of served as a crowdfunding campaign. And he didn't think that would happen, but because of how well it took on and with his like following with his brand, it kind of turned into that. So I think there's something to be said about that as well.
Yeah, again, you just kind of like budded a little seed of a thought too of like, is it, now the debate happens maybe, is it easier to build a brand with a great NFT rather than first build your brand in CPG and then launch that NFT?
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe there's no right answer. Maybe some can do great one way, some can do other. You could launch both for two different communities. Like maybe you have a very strong NFT community on one side of things, and then you have the CPG community, and the NFT community just likes owning digital versions of your product, but maybe they're not the ones who are going into the stores buying your physical product every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, man. There's definitely a lot to think about. And I could honestly talk about this all day long. In fact, we might need to have another conversation just about CPG and NFT and warn people ahead of time that we're just going to geek out on it. So if they're not into it, they can just, you know, skip to the next episode. But for now, I think you've given people more than enough to think about.
Oh yeah. Or maybe it'd be cool at a conference one day. Cause I think too, at these expos, as founders, we're usually try to be on the cutting edge of technology. And so it could be a great kind of, around the table talk, from different people who want to chime in and talk about it and learn more. Maybe followed by an onboarding class to help people get set up with their own wallets and accounts and everything.
Yes, I love it, dude. I love it. We'll have to circle back around to that later on. But I think we've been on even a little longer than I told you. So I appreciate you taking the extra time to chat and want to just give you the opportunity right now to, you know, let us know what's going on with Hummy and where people should connect with you or the brand if they want to learn more.
So again, the name of the brand is Hummy. You can find us at www.hummi.com. Also on Instagram at Hummy underscore yummy, YUMMY. There you can check out some of the cartoons. You can also see one or two animations that maybe eventually make their way into the NFTs. Just reach out if you like our products, have any ideas, if you like NFTs. I'm always happy to just chat with another person who's passionate about something. It can really be anything. In regards to ask from a company standpoint, as mentioned earlier, we are fundraising. So if you're an investor listening to this and interested kind of learning more and obtaining access to our pitch deck and more of our strategic roadmap and plans and projections, all of that fun stuff, you can reach out at Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, at Hummy, H-U-M-M-I-I.com. And besides that, just want to say again, thank you so much, Taylor, and the team over at Fiddle for having us on today.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, Tyler, I appreciate your time. The feeling's mutual. It's great to chat. And thanks for your time, and we'll chat again later.
Looking forward to it. Maybe eventually an in-person visit in Utah.
Yeah, for sure. That would be awesome. All right. Take care, Tyler. Thanks.
You too, Taylor. See you.
Thanks.
The Physical Product Movement Podcast is brought to you by Fiddle. To find out more about Fiddle and how our industry-leading inventory ops platform is giving modern brands and manufacturers full visibility into their inventory and operations, visit fiddle.io and then make sure to search for Physical Product Movement in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Fiddle, thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, my name is Taylor Howe, and I'm the marketing manager here at Fiddle. I want to jump on real quick to tell you about an incredible free resource that we put together for CPG brands. It's called Fiddle Connect. It's a curated database of over 3,000 co-packers and suppliers. You'll get websites, phone numbers, locations, categories, and more, all in one place. It's a must-have for any CPG brand, especially in the food, beverage, or nutraceutical space. And again, it's 100% free. To get immediate access, just go to fiddle.io/connect. We are constantly updating the database, and we promise you're going to love it. It'll save you time and headaches by helping you get to suppliers and co-packers faster than ever. So again, just go to fiddle.io/connect to get free access today.